From Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. The reason the Bible Answer Man is on the air is to defend the Christian faith, proclaim the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and to teach discipleship to his followers, because life and truth matter. For more information or to order equipping resources, call 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Today's broadcast is an encore presentation. And now, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
We have been featuring Graham Veal's The New Atheism, A Survival Guide. Graham Veal is a high school teacher, and I think as such is perfectly suited to address our audience with literature that will equip them to always be ready to give an answer to everyone who asks them to give the reason for the hope that they have, and then do it with gentleness and with respect. What I love about The New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is it is dealing with not just a apologetic issue, but the apologetic issue. How one views their origins ultimately will determine how they live their life. New Atheism, A Survival Guide, available for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. You can pick up your copy on the web for your gift at equip.org, or when you write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And do remember, Resource Consultants is always standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Graham Veal joins me once again on the broadcast. Good to have you with us.
I'm very glad to be here, Hank. It's a real honor to be on the show. Christian Research Journal was a big help to me as a young Christian.
And you are in a completely different time zone.
Totally. Well, Armagh is in a very unique time zone. We have our own time zone over here. So time runs slightly differently for Irishmen, I think, than the rest of the world. But, yeah, we're a good 4 or 5 hours ahead of you.
4 or 5 hours. Hey, let's talk a little bit about something that you address in the book. You call it dogmatic scientism. A lot of people do not understand. I found this out recently when I was in Taiwan. A lot of people don't understand the difference between respecting science and accepting dogmatic scientism.
Okay, well, dogmatic scientism, the phrase was initially coined by a philosopher called Paul Moser. I expand on it slightly in the book, but dogmatic scientism is the idea that the universe is ultimately composed of particles or subatomic particles in motion, and therefore that explains everything that's happening that we can see, that we can experience, and that therefore the scientific method, the methods of the hard sciences, physics and chemistry, are the only reliable route to knowledge. So therefore you should only follow or believe something if it's taught by physics or chemistry, or if it can be reduced to physics and chemistry. And it also follows from that the only hope for human progress and the only hope for human flourishing comes from following science. And the difficulty is that there's no scientific experiment or scientific theory which teaches dogmatic scientism as a result or as part of the theory. I mean, it's a purely philosophical view of the world. So there's no scientific reason to believe that dogmatic scientism is true. But basically, scientism is just only trusting science, justifying all your beliefs by science, and putting your hope in science, the hard physical sciences like physics, chemistry, biology. And there's a world of difference between that, obviously, and simply accepting that science is a very good way of finding out things about the physical world, which I think would just be the common sense view of science. So there's a difference between dogmatic scientism and just simply respecting science, if that clarifies things a little.
Yeah, and you know, something that you point out is that there is this perceived war between Christianity and science, as though science provides us with facts. Christianity is founded on faith. unmask that idiosyncratic irony?
Yeah, the part of the problem, I mean, the huge problem with it, is that if it wasn't for Christianity, it's very doubtful that we would have science as we have it today, or that we would have the natural sciences. Now, I don't want to say that, you know, Christianity equals science. It did take several centuries for this to come about. But at the end of the day, the first scientists were men who believed that the universe was governed by laws because there was a God. So that's the first thing, laws, because there's a lawmaker. So we can find out about these laws because our minds have been designed by God. So if our minds can do mathematics and God has a mind, you know, that maybe God used math to design the universe. So there's laws, and they're discoverable. But thirdly, human sin and human frailty means that we just can't go with our gut feelings. We can't do what the Greek philosophers did and sit in our armchairs and try and work out what God would have done, because there's a big gap between God and us. So in other words, there is a God, but you're not him. You know, there's a big gap. So you've got to show humility. And you've got to do experiments to test your ideas, to see what way God did make the world, because you can't predict it. You're not as smart as God. But God's free as well. God's free to make the world any way he wants. And without those ideas, you would not get the science that we have benefited so much from today up and off the ground. And to a large extent, then, I would argue that the success of science confirms Christian theology. You know, it's evidence for the truth of Christian theology. If these men said, well, this is what Christian theology leads us to expect the world to be like, and their method is highly successful, then it should confirm that the world is a rational creation made by a rational creator. So the idea that there's some sort of fundamental conflict here between Christianity and science is just historically naive. It's philosophically suspect. It does not stand up to scrutiny. And it's really ironic that Dawkins and co. are pushing this as the strongest argument for the new atheism.
We're talking to Graham Veal. He is the author of New Atheism, a survival guide available through the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast. For your gift, you can access your copy on the web at equip.org, or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As always, resource consultant standing by as well, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. One of the things I think, Graham, that we need to explain to the listening audience is the relationship between apologetics and evangelism. So often I talk about apologetics as the handmaiden to evangelism. Cash that out for us.
I think that whenever somebody becomes a Christian, there's obviously an emotional aspect of this. And I think, unfortunately, what a lot of evangelicals do is they focus on the emotional and they forget about everything else that's going on. When I became a Christian, I made a judgment. I was being told by the gospel that I was a sinner, that I was alienated from God. You know, I was being told a lot of things that were truth claims. And I made a judgment about those truth claims. Now, there was a lot of other things going on as well. But in the middle of all that is an evaluation of truth claims. Does it make sense to think of myself as a creation? Does it make sense to think of myself as alienated from a creator? To think of myself as sinful, as morally flawed, as not doing what I ought? Does that all make sense of me? And I made a judgment. Now, what apologetics is really doing is just clarifying the gospel, telling people that you've got good reason to believe that this is true. You can back it up by evidence. You're clearing the way, to some extent, for the gospel to be heard, but you're also working with evangelism. I don't think the two can be separated. At the end of the day, what you're doing is you're trying to clarify reasons for accepting the gospel as true. And Peter Morrow, who writes on a website I'm on, I mean, he says, like it or not, every Christian is an apologist. Sooner or later, when you're doing evangelism, you will be asked, why should I believe what you're saying is true? And at that stage, you have to give an answer, and you're doing apologetics. So you can do it poorly, or you can do it faithfully and thoughtfully and carefully. And that's why it's so important that people do turn to resources like, you know, the Christian Research Journal, to good Christians who are giving good, solid, sound answers to the questions that people are asking.
You mention morality, and I think one of the things that the atheist has to address is there any basis for them to believe in morality at all?
Not that I can see. I think in the sense they can certainly have moral experiences and therefore believe in morality. And, you know, obviously, you know, they believe in good and evil. But when you ask them to justify that belief or to explain that belief, but I think they find themselves in very, very weak ground. So one new atheist, P.D. Myers, on his blog, you know, calls the universe a heartless and a nasty place. Now, if the universe is like that, if the universe is heartless, if the universe has no purpose or meaning or rationality behind it, then why should anybody follow any moral laws? You know, why not put yourself first? So if it's just all molecules and matter moving around in the void, if that's all we are at the end of the day, eventually the human race is going to disappear. So why should somebody be moral? Why should somebody be moral? And I don't think they have an answer to that question, particularly the likes of Dawkins. Again, Dawkins calls morality a blessed, precious mistake. Now, how can I have a moral obligation? How can there be moral rules that tell me what I ought to do if morality is a mistake foisted on me by evolution? And so I think that with new atheists in particular have a real problem when it comes to morality, and that not only can they not explain it, I think, like you said in the question, Hank, they don't really have a very good reason to believe in it at all. You know, they almost would be better just holding up their hands and saying, look, we just think this is all a bit of a game, really.
And some atheists, they bite the bullet. I mentioned on the broadcast an atheist by the name of Alex Rosenberg, who's written The Atheist Guide to Reality, and he just bites the bullet. He says there is no difference between right, wrong, good, bad. Goes on to say, just so you don't miss the point, there is no moral difference between them.
And I think Alex Rosenberg is really just being consistent. I think he at least has the decency to be consistent, to take what the likes of Myers and Dawkins are saying, and he's saying, right, this is the logical consequence of your worldview. I'm biting the bullet. I'm not going to call it a blessed, precious mistake, because that doesn't make any sense if you think about it. It can't be blessed and precious if it's a mistake. I'm just going to say morality is just a game foisted on us by our genes. And meaning and intentionality and free will and all these things are just illusions. And if you're going to have to be, if you're going to be consistent, if you're going to take the new atheist worldview, particularly as outlined by the likes of Dennett and Dawkins, Myers, Coyne, you're just going to have to bite the bullet here and say morality is a mistake and go with Rosenberg. I mean, the option's there. He's laid it out. He spelled it out in some detail. Very respectable philosopher. And the only reason I can think of why new atheist writers like Dawkins don't go along with Rosenberg is it would be a little bit more difficult to sell your books.
Graham Veal, he is the author of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, the book available for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and our outreaches around the world. You can acquire your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, on the web, equip.org, or write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As always, resource consultant standing by, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. And of course, you know, one of the things that we appreciate about this book so much is we know that there are literally tens of thousands of students that need this book and need it immediately. So if you are a teacher, if you are either a teacher in a secular classroom but a believer, or in a Christian classroom, or in a Sunday school classroom, you need this book. If you're a pastor, you need copies of this book for just such a time as a question coming up, you don't have the time to provide a solid and significant answer, but you can point to a resource. If you are a mother or a father, your children need this book. This is a book for my children. It's a book for your children. It is a must read. It's one of those books that you can read rather quickly, but you can also get the point because the points are made with profundity, but simplicity and clarity as well. Again, the book available for your gift. The easiest way to access it is the web, equip.org. We'll be back in just a few moments right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, so please don't touch that dial.
Alex Rosenberg, professor of philosophy at Duke University and a devout atheist, bites the bullet in noting that if atheists desire to enjoy life without illusions, they must realize there is no meaning or purpose of life, and there is no moral difference between right and wrong. In other words, Rosenberg says, an atheist will have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Tragically, multitudes of college students are now drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense. Graham Veal's book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, penetrating, and practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of new atheists. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Stay with us. Hank Hanegraaff will be back with more right after this. InterVarsity, one of the largest collegiate associations in the country, has been derecognized on a growing number of college campuses for believing in traditional morals. In 2014, Brendan Eich, CEO of Mozilla and creator of JavaScript, was forced from his position just for having donated $1,000 to California's Proposition 8, a ballot initiative limiting marriage to a man and a woman. A plethora of such examples demonstrate that a tsunami of secularism has been unleashed, and we've not yet seen its high watermark. To equip you for the days ahead, read Mary Eberstadt's book, It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. Receive your copy of It's Dangerous to Believe as our thanks for supporting the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or visit our website at equip.org. In The Atheist's Guide to Reality, Enjoying Life Without Illusions, Duke University professor and New Atheist philosopher Alex Rosenberg bites the bullet and declares that to be a consistent atheist, you'll have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Because a growing multitude of college students are drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense, we shouldn't be surprised that so many of our national spiritual and cultural indicators are headed south. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of new atheists. To receive your copy of New Atheism, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-transforming outreaches. Or visit equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Christians today are exposed to relentless attacks on theism by so-called new atheists. Will a weakened Christianity survive the new atheist? Graham Veal's book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, will help you understand the new atheism and how best to respond to the threat it poses. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org, equip.org. Now, back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. A couple more questions for Graham Veal. Before the break, we were talking about the father of the new atheists. His name is Richard Dawkins, and he was featured by CNN in a special report titled, Is There God? He was at the beginning, he was at the end, he was somewhere in between, but he is the go-to father of the new atheists, and this is what he had to say on CNN.
So would the world be a better place without God?
The world would be an enormously better place without God, without religion, yes. There are all sorts of things we don't know, but let's seek the truth. Let's be open-minded. The time should come, I hope it will come, when we don't even need the word atheist, because we shall live in a time, I hope, when people believe things because there's evidence. And then, since there's no evidence for fairies or leprechauns or gods, we shouldn't need the word atheism at all.
It's kind of interesting as you listen to that clip. The music almost sounds chapel-like, and really the narrative that we have in the piece by CNN, and it was a full-hour piece, was a narrative in which you find atheists worshiping in chapels and churches, but they're worshiping without any God. They're showing that worship, just worship of life without any rules, is far better than having a God who tells us how we should live our life. And of course, as you just heard, Graham, he's pointing out that in his fondest dreams, there's going to be a time when people believe in things because there are evidences. And as I said before the break, he himself believes in things without evidence. You point that out in your book.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, Richard Dawkins, if you follow what he says about, you know, the explanation of why there's life on Earth, which, you know, really, if you look at Darwinian explanations, really what Charles Darwin set out to do was explain, well, why do we have human life here on Earth? But really what Dawkins concedes within the God delusion is that there's three very improbable events. The first is the origin of life, and that's that the improbability there isn't getting a mechanism to form life, it's getting all the different molecules are formed in very different environments, so getting them all together is very improbable. And then getting complex cells, another incredibly improbable event. That would have taken one cell to swallow another cell unsuccessfully and then to develop a new organism. Incredibly improbable. And then getting the sort of very complex creatures that can support consciousness. He sees that as very, very improbable. And Dawkins realizes you put those three improbabilities together, you really don't have an explanation for life on Earth. Darwinism doesn't cut it. So what's his solution? Well, there's billions and billions of life-bearing planets out there. Well, what is evidence for those life-bearing planets? Because that's a contentious issue. To get a planet capable of life, I mean, a resource I'd recommend, there's the Privileged Planet by the Discovery Institute, which covers this very well, and it's really not controversial. It was, or at least it's scientifically mainstream. There's a lot of scientific mainstream guys out there who say to get a planet that can support complex life, you know, you need to have very, very specific conditions. And so the odds of getting one of these planets, billions and billions and billions and billions to one. So we just don't have evidence that there's billions and billions of planets out there capable of bearing life. Dawkins doesn't deal with that issue at all. So where's his evidence for billions of planets? Presents none. And even if these planets are there, Dawkins has made a prediction. He says that really, you know, it's just sheer fluke that on Earth, you know, that we over the gap of life and then complex life and then conscious beings. So three flukes. And the reason for that is because evolution has had billions and billions of goes on all these planets capable of bearing life, which he has no evidence for. But that would predict that even if these planets are there, I would go and find that most of them will have no life, and then a small proportion will have a few simple cells, and then a smaller proportion again will have slightly more complex cells. And he gives me there's a detailed prediction there of what we'd expect to find when we find all these life-bearing planets. We'll be able to tell us exactly what proportions will be of what type of life on each. And there's no evidence for any of this. It follows precisely from his argument in the God delusion, and really his evidence just isn't there at all. If we went out and found a planet, the planet's teeming with complex life everywhere, we find lots of these life-bearing planets teeming with higher animals, his whole thesis falls apart. And it's just extraordinary that somebody who would present an argument that weak would then insist, well, you know, we're evidentialists, you know, we're atheists, only believe on the evidence, we only accept the evidence, we only accept rational argument. He has yet to respond to the criticisms of a central argument in the God delusion. He hasn't done that. He hasn't responded to the academic criticisms of his central argument, the Boeing 747 gambit. The man's extraordinary.
What's also very extraordinary is that there is evidence for God. And yet, in a rather ironic twist, he's pointing out that there's no evidence for fairies, there's no evidence for leprechauns, and likewise, there is no evidence for God. Talk about a confusion of categories.
That's extraordinary. I mean, if you're talking about fairies, ghosts, all these things, these are limited beings within the universe which explain very little. You know, all they're going to explain really is a sighting. If you're talking about a ghost, you're talking about a spatially located being. It's located within space, within time, all it can explain is a few sightings. There's very little explanatory work at all. When you're talking about God, you're not just talking about adding one more thing to the universe. You're not saying, well, you know, the universe has atoms, molecules, plus God. What you're talking about is the very nature of our universe. You're saying our universe is a creation, and this is how we should interpret it. And you're saying that God transcends space and time. God is above that. God created that. He's the reason for that. He's not made up of lots of little components, like a giant computer, which is what Dawkins, believe it or not, compares him to in the God delusion. This is his central argument. He literally says God would be like a giant computer with lots of components, which that's beyond caricature to have that view of God. God would be above this. God would be above space and time. And that explains why we have this extraordinary order. Let's just look at that alone. Why is life possible at all when the universe could have been an infinite number of different ways, when we could have just had a vast sea of chaos? Why do we have order and structure and laws of nature which can be expressed in the language of mathematics, language which physicists call beautiful? Why do we have finely tuned constants which make planets and chemistry and all the things that make life wonderful possible? And why is it that we are so fortunate that if you look at what evolutionists say had to occur, why did we just get so lucky time and time and time again so that we're walking around living, conscious, embodied beings that can enjoy this world? That evidence alone, and that is an ocean of evidence there, that is an ocean of evidence, is explained if there is a personal, purposive creator outside this universe who created it and is responsible for it. There's an ocean of evidence. And really, Dawkins' only way of dodging it is this silly idea that God would somehow be composed of objects smaller than himself and therefore would be vastly complex. I spend a chapter of my book dealing with that, but really it is such a ludicrous argument, it defies belief. But if the man wants evidence, there it is. Now, he can say, I disagree or I interpret it differently, but there's the evidence. There's the case for the prosecution. He has to respond to that. A defense barrister doesn't just say, well, that's just silly. That's like believing in leprechauns. He has to give me an argument and stop the name-calling, because at the minute all he has is a lot of name-calling.
I want to touch on the importance of this issue. I mean, you see a special like this. It was a full hour, and CNN was really pushing the narrative that atheism is viable. And quite frankly, I thought it was so skewed towards trying to portray Christians as being a little silly, not particularly being clever or smart or erudite, but bigoted and hateful. And in fact, they really push that narrative in the broadcast. But when you think about the consequences of this issue, in the few moments we have left before the break, underscore the importance.
Let me just underscore one, and this one concerns me. Richard Dawkins' latest, his latest meme, is to argue that we should not be allowed to call children Christian. And what he's really arguing is that we should not be allowed to raise our children in our faith, because faith is irrational, and we should not be allowed to impose it on them. That's fascist. That's fascist. And at the minute, it's just an academic who's going on and giving me sound bites on CNN. The danger is that sooner or later, some politician is going to start taking this man seriously and is going to start saying things. And in the UK, we have, in Scotland, they're talking about having a state-sponsored guardian that will look at, you know, is supposed to take care of the security of your children. It's much more dangerous here. But what we're saying here is a man who is arguing that he knows the best way to raise my child. Now, that's fascist. And this is this needs to be looked at much, much, much more critically by the secular press, because he is advancing ideas that if somebody takes seriously, we're going to have the state saying to parents, listen, you know, whatever your beliefs are, you've got to stop imposing them on children. You can't raise your children with your values. We know best. Richard Dawkins knows best. And then there's the spiritual side of this, which, of course, is so much deeper, where you have people crying out for justice and forgiveness and for meaning and all the things that they cry out for spiritually. And Dawkins is just completely neglecting that. And to pretend the idea that you can somehow worship without acknowledging that there's a personal creator is just, again, ludicrous. So there's spiritual dangers. But when we look at some of his latest ideas, they really do make me worry.
And this is the reason we need the Survival Guide. Again, it's The New Atheism. It is available for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and our outreaches around the world. Accessible on the web at equip.org, or when you write me, of course, at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Do remember, resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. Please don't touch that dial. I'll be right back with more of Graham Veal.
Richard Dawkins' grasp of philosophical argumentation wouldn't earn him a passing grade in an undergraduate philosophy course. Yet the dumbed-down ridicule he and other new atheists wield slides effortlessly past a growing number of college students receptive to such ridiculous rhetoric. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, offers an accessible, penetrating, and practical resource for countering new atheist attacks. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Don't go away. Hank Hanegraaff will be back in a moment with more of the answers you need today. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Richard Dawkins' grasp of philosophical arguments wouldn't earn him a passing grade in a freshman philosophy course, but he doesn't mean to deal with the questions that theists are asking. He simply ridicules his opponent's position. In New Atheism, A Survival Guide, Graham Veal explains, the new atheist stance is that the reasons for theism must be so bad, why even read about them? My goodness, no, you just dismiss them. Veal goes on to show that the new atheists have not offered one original argument for atheism, but they've plenty of original insults. New Atheism offers an accessible, practical resource for countering new atheist attacks. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. My faith versus my job. My faith versus my social standing. My faith versus my future. For more and more Christians, notes Mary Eberstadt, such either-or thought experiments aren't theoretical exercises. They are constant real-life companions. Houston pastors were subpoenaed to turn over any sermons mentioning gender identity or the mayor. A U.S. Marine in North Carolina was court-martialed, discharged, and denied military benefits for posting on her office computer, "No weapon formed against me shall prosper." The Christian Research Institute is here to equip you to act against the growing secular onslaught. Read Mary Eberstadt's book, It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. Receive It's Dangerous to Believe as our thanks for your support. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit our website at equip.org. Alex Rosenberg, professor of philosophy at Duke University and a devout atheist, bites the bullet in noting that if atheists desire to enjoy life without illusions, they must realize there is no meaning or purpose of life, and there is no moral difference between right and wrong. In other words, Rosenberg says, an atheist will have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Tragically, multitudes of college students are now drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense. Graham Veal's book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, penetrating, and practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of new atheists. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. We now return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. Again, New Atheism, A Survival Guide by Graham Veal, available for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and our outreaches around the world. Graham Veal is a high school teacher and probably understands as well as anyone that ideas have consequences, and he has written this book because students are being impacted by what they think is a defensible argument, but turns out to be nothing more than a dogmatic assertion. In fact, a dogmatic assertion given with what Graham Veal calls the sneer factor. Graham Veal joins us on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Good to have you.
Very glad to be here, Hank. I'm sorry about the day I'm getting here. If there's an awkward way of doing something, an Irishman will find it.
Talk about, for a moment, the distinctive brand of atheism that is called the New Atheism, its distinction from the atheism that we've all grown familiar with over the years.
Yeah, I think there's several differences that we're seeing in the New Atheism. It tends to be associated with the books by Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, but I actually think one of the most clear distinguishing features of the New Atheism is that it uses online media in a way that's really never been used before. Blogs, forums, Twitter, you know, and this has given a sense of identity to a community that really had lacked it up to now. Humanist groups tended to be quite small and isolated, whereas now they're part of a vibrant online movement. So that's certainly something that we need to realize as Christians, is that there's a new sense of identity there among what we would call new atheists. But I think two differences in the way that modern atheists or the new atheists would think. The first is their approach to faith. And that is that they see faith as inherently irrational. Faith is, in their opinion, always blind belief, and that therefore faith tends towards fanaticism, and that makes faith dangerous. And I think, and secondly, in terms of belief, they would also hold to something that I would call dogmatic scientism. That's a term coined by philosopher Paul Moser, but dogmatic scientism is really the idea that any belief you have must be justified by science. And really, the rhetoric of the New Atheism ties into this idea then that they are rational because they hold to scientific beliefs. Christians are irrational, and because they're irrational, arguments won't work, so you merely ridicule, you know, you sneer, you put down. You don't really attempt a dialogue or use reason or debate. So that would be the distinguishing features, to my mind, of the New Atheism.
We are talking to Graham Veal again. He is the author of New Atheism, A Survival Guide. He is a high school teacher in Ireland. And as a high school teacher, you obviously don't want to set up a we they siege mentality against the world, but you are interested in equipping your students, because if they're not equipped, they're going to fall for the rhetoric, and there are real consequences to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would hope that any teacher worth their salt, whatever their religious views, would take a look at atheism. And to be honest, partly what I have to do in class quite often is to say to students, listen, stop taking your ideas off the internet. And a lot of these arguments can just be reduced to tweets and to, you know, 140-character long arguments and just put-downs. And it's very difficult sometimes to get through to a student is that a very clever insult is not an argument. And I think that Christians need to take this on board too, although I'm not sure that we fall prey to it just as much as some other online movements have. But, you know, an insult is not an argument. And it is very important, you know, stepping away from just an RE teacher's role to, you know, as somebody who's interested in evangelism and apologetics, you know, ideas matter, thoughts matter, and I do worry that the church that I see is not really equipping young people for the questions and the challenges that are going to come, you know, over the next 10, 20 years. I don't think that young people are being particularly equipped to deal with, to give an answer for the hope that's within them. And I do worry that there is a crisis that you may be facing the church, the evangelical church, certainly in Northern Ireland, as I would see it, and I would suspect elsewhere.
One of the things you talk about rightly is the clumsy parody that is being made in the atheist community of the intelligent design movement, and the parody involves the idea that a piece of pasta created the universe.
Yeah, the flying spaghetti monster. Yeah, this is a highly highly unusual argument, to say the very least. Flying Spaghetti Monster is just the idea dreamt up by a student, Bobby Henderson. I think you have to be an undergraduate to find this funny. But the idea is that he believed that a piece of sentient pasta made the universe. And the idea is, well, you know, if you could believe the God made the universe, why not? You know, if the Christian God, why not a piece of pasta or a piece of sentient pasta? You know, and one of the things that I would try and do in the book is to point out, like a lot of other people, is that you know, we've got very good background knowledge about pasta, and we know that it's part of the physical universe, and that we know what its properties are, and it's not the sort of thing that can go around designing anything. The whole point of theism is that there's something that transcends the physical universe, that isn't made of physical parts, and that only by going to something personal that can transcend the universe, which is a perfectly coherent idea, everybody knows what it means, that's the only way you get good explanations. But I think what the Flying Spaghetti Monster reveals is just how theologically illiterate a lot of atheists are. They just don't seem to understand what the term God means. If they believe that this caricature has any force at all, you know, they really just haven't got to grips with what the church and what the Bible means by God. I don't even think Witter works particularly well as a critique even of intelligent design, which tries to avoid theology, but that's a different discussion. Certainly when you're doing evangelism, when somebody uses the Flying Spaghetti Monster as a counter-argument, you know, you really have to get back to basics here and ask, like, why on earth would you seriously offer that as an objection to Christian belief?
You bring something up that I think is important. I think oftentimes, even in the Christian community, people have a childish view of God. They never really grow in their understanding of the immensity of God or the creation itself, where you look on a micro level at a dot, a period at the end of a sentence, and recognize it has 100 billion atoms of carbon. Or if you look on a macro level at the galaxies, 170 billion galaxies with 170 billion stars, just the divine nature, the immensity that you see in the universe representing the God who created it is enough to give us a more adult kind of a view of who it is that we serve and worship.
Yes, and I think what I find interesting quite often in the church, you would be faced with this idea that apologetics is somehow a dry, academic, unspiritual almost discipline. And when it comes to my view of God, it was really through looking at these arguments, you know, explaining the universe and explaining who God is to people who don't believe in him, that I really came to grasp just what it means to believe in a God of limitless power, a God who, you know, has no limitations. As great as our universe is, it's limited by its nature, by the laws of physics, it's limited by time. When you're talking about God, you're talking about somebody who's got limitless sovereign freedom, limitless loving freedom. And whenever you stop to reflect on that, it's mind-blowing. It gives you a much deeper appreciation of who God is, and that helps me worship. So the idea that giving an answer for the hope within you is somehow less spiritual somehow than other works in the church just strikes me as wholly false. This is something that's helped me tremendously as a Christian.
You've alluded to this already, but for our listening audience, underscore the reason that you wrote this book in an accessible fashion.
I really wanted to get something that was a little bit in between. There's some very good, very basic introductory apologetics books. There are some books that are very, very heavy and dense and academically thick. I really wanted to get some of those more academic arguments down to an accessible level, but to move a wee bit deeper than maybe just a basic introduction, because the new atheists are really targeting guys who are moving into college, and this is where they're trying to grow. But what I wanted was a book that could really help young people or those who work with young people get a grasp of why new atheism and caricatures like new atheism of Christianity, which we get a lot in the British secular press. There's just a complete misunderstanding of Christian theology. I wanted to deal with those, help young people spot those. I wanted them to understand what the arguments for Christianity were. And I also wanted something that was a little bit more fun to read than maybe people would have been expecting. So, you know, I use examples like the Loch Ness Monster and all sorts of things to try and get through to people, you know, what a good explanation is and how we know that Christianity provides good explanations. And comparing it to, you know, maybe what we'd call, you know, more poor sort of mythological explanations and things like that. So it's to try to get people to, and to get young people and those working with young people to engage minds. I worry sometimes that we think that a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of activity and a lot of fun and a few talks about relationships are all we need to keep young people in the church. And I think the challenges are going to be much deeper than that. And it's certainly that I think they have been for me growing up. The challenges were much deeper. And I think that's going to get worse as time goes on. If we want to reach out to young people, if we want to keep our own young people, I think we really need to start dealing with these critiques, but not in a way that is dry or in a way that is academic, but in a way that's full of scripture and in a way that teaches young people to worship God, that connects us to what we believe as a church in terms of the gospel and in terms of who God is.
Graham Veal, he is the author of New Atheism, A Survival Guide. It is available for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and our outreaches around the world, available at equip.org. You can also talk to one of our resource consultants, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. Our thanks to Graham Veal. We'll look forward to seeing you right back here tomorrow with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Thank you for joining us today. Followers of the Lord Jesus in our time are exposed to relentless attacks on theism by so-called new atheists. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, will help you understand the new atheism and how best to respond to the threat it poses. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the mind-shaping ministries of CRI, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you a copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide. Just call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. Of course, you can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271, or simply visit us online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. InterVarsity, one of the largest collegiate associations in the country, has been derecognized on a growing number of college campuses for believing in traditional morals. In 2014, Brendan Eich, CEO of Mozilla and creator of JavaScript, was forced from his position just for having donated $1,000 to California's Proposition 8, a ballot initiative limiting marriage to a man and a woman. A plethora of such examples demonstrate that a tsunami of secularism has been unleashed, and we've not yet seen its high watermark. To equip you for the days ahead, read Mary Eberstadt's book, It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. Receive your copy of It's Dangerous to Believe as our thanks for supporting the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or visit our website at equip.org. In The Atheist Guide to Reality, Enjoying Life Without Illusions, Duke University professor and new atheist philosopher Alex Rosenberg bites the bullet and declares that to be a consistent atheist, you'll have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Because a growing multitude of college students are drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense, we shouldn't be surprised that so many of our national spiritual and cultural indicators are headed south. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of New Atheist. To receive your copy of New Atheism, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-transforming outreaches. Or visit equip.org.